Welcome to the Reckless Dice Live Play Sessions, where we explore the grim world of perilous adventure and Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. Tonight's adventure, A Rough Night of the Three Feathers, the first of five scenarios by Graham Davis from the adventure book Rough Nights and Hard Days. My name is Jesse Burke, and I'll be your host and GM. Our cast of characters include Layla Burke, playing Bernagut, a rank 2 dwarven investigator.
Hi!
Doug Beard, playing Madison Pattison, a rank 2 halfling thief.
Hello.
And Chris Wagner, playing Einar Grosser, a rank 2 human spy.
Hello.
All right. Bernagut, I'm sorry I didn't do your last name.
My full name is Bernagut, Kazma's daughter, Ganvalgar.
That is a mouthful.
I go by Bernie.
So the Three Feathers. It's a medium-sized inn on the riverside, typical of countless similar hostelries to be found along the banks of the Empire's rivers and canals. Inns are normally spaced out about a day's journey apart, providing moorings and accommodation for those travelers who do not care to continue their journey by night. Now this inn stands on the riverbank, at least a day's journey from the nearest town or village. The Three Feathers is situated some 20 miles north of Grissenwald on the River Reich. It has a 10-foot stone wall that extends from the main building all the way to the water. And while I'm reading this, I'm going to give you guys the overview map so you can kind of situate yourselves here. Outside the wall is nothing but forest and a wagon track leading to a nearby road. The next village is more than half a day away on horseback, a day by foot, and the nearest town is further still. Inside the wall stands the main building, a stables with an attached smithy, and an outhouse. A small landing stage has also been built on the riverbank. Now it's been a long day's travel. The sun is just beginning to go down as you come upon an inn. And those two large pictures there are kind of the scene that you come to as you arrive. And as you draw closer, you notice that the place is unusually busy. There is a large coach pulled up outside, and lackeys are busying themselves with various trunks and chests as liveried men-at-arms look on. Inside, the servants are hurrying to and fro, and the innkeeper is engrossed in conversation with a scribe who carries a visibly bulging purse. It is a full 10 minutes before you can attract his attention. So I'm going to throw a couple portraits out here for some folks. Hey, Duggers, can you pull those dice to the side there? We won't need those for right now. So here's Hans Orff. He'll represent our landlord and his staff. Let's see here.
Is Hans the woman?
Hans is this guy in the back here.
Okay. So not the very voluptuous woman.
Yikes.
Yeah, she's a looker. Here is the Graven's staff. We'll go to them in a moment here.
Are they all currently armed?
I'll describe them in a second. I just want to get a few of the visuals.
We go on to the next inn.
I know, right?
Okay. So Hans approaches you after about 10 minutes of just dealing with the chaos that is this covered wagon and the entourage that follows whoever owns this. Welcome, he says at last. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. We have a distinguished guest tonight, the Gravin Maria Ulrich von Liebowitz of Ambostein, no less. I hardly know whether I'm coming or going. Now then, what do you want a room? What am I saying? Of course you do. Excuse me again, I'll only be a moment. And he runs off, and you have to wait another few minutes as he directs a train of servants to the Graven's rooms. And he comes back after a while. So sorry. He says, I'm it's really just mad this evening. Right? And what can I do for you?
Rooms, please.
Rooms. All right. So you make your way in through the front door, and you're starting to get kind of the lay of the land. The main building of the Three Feathers has two stories. Its brick and timber walls are 2.5 feet thick with a white and lime wash. The lower floor contains the bar room, and I have two larger blown up maps of that one here for us to show where people are. That's the downstairs. This is the upstairs.
Okay. Real quick, I don't want to take away too much from you, but as we're coming through, it looks like there's some signboards posted. Anything of note on those as we're entering?
One of them has the rates.
Okay.
And has, and I'll cover that in just a second here. And the other one has what they're serving today.
Okay.
And then there's also kind of a couple little like rolled up parchments of like traveler's notes or warnings of like, you know, hey, look out for this thing on the North Road.
But no pictures of like a wanted poster or anything like that that we should be looking out for.
No. And really just the commotion about this place is this bustle of like 15 or 20 people who are moving all this, the grabbing stuff around and getting her situated for the night. So the lower floor contains the bar room.
Just out of curiosity, I don't mean to interrupt, but
sure.
Can I do a perception check? I'm looking for anything juicy, box-wise, anything that looks like it might have a...
You're looking valuables?
Yeah, why not? I'm not looking through their goods, but if I can take a glance or two for anything that might look like it'd be holding coin.
Go for it.
Success.
All right, let me know how much...
They're doubles.
Critical
success.
Well, two, yeah.
Right, yeah, doubles are success. All right, so
and
you...
critical.
You scope out, and you notice that there are a variety of smaller chests that have some ornate hinges to them. They look a little more decorative. Those, possibly jewelry boxes, are being carried by somebody who looks like he is maybe a personal servant, not so much a... one of the group guards or anything else.
Okay.
There's a variety of boxes like that being moved around.
Okay.
So riches abound in some capacity, you suspect.
Here, here.
I think I missed it, too. I thought we are at the Three Feathers, but you keep saying the Gravins.
That's the family, these guys here.
Oh.
So I'll show you guys her in a second, but I think Gravin is another word for like a baroness.
Oh.
Or, is that...
Something.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a title.
Oh, okay. Got it.
The lower floor contains the bar room, the dormitory, the kitchens, and accommodations for the inn staff, and there's also a storeroom and a cellar and such. The upper floors have 20-some-odd rooms of various sizes, some double rooms, some single rooms, and a narrow hallway that connects all of them, and a single staircase going upstairs. So a single room costs, Hans lets you know, a single room costs 10 silver for the night, a double is 15. And a place in the dormitory costs a single silver. All prices include supper and breakfast, and you know, for the folks who don't really mind, you can certainly cram an extra person or two into some of the rooms.
Okay.
I don't take up much room.
You don't take up much room. So he says, "What can I offer for you tonight?"
I think a basic room is fine.
Yeah, you guys gonna get one room?
Yep.
Dormitories, y'all gonna cram together?
No, I don't want a dorm. Do we want a dorm?
We probably want a private room.
If they're available.
But I don't have any money, so I'm with you guys.
Oh.
A private room costs 15 for a double.
15
10 for
pence?
A silver.
Or
silvers.
Whoa.
Sorry, how many silvers?
15 silver for a double room,
uh-huh.
And 10 silver for a single, or it's a single silver to live in the common dormitory downstairs.
I will take the common. I only have 2 silver, so.
Yeah.
We're dorming it.
I guess so.
All right, and somebody paying for the innkeeper wants to say, so that's for the two of you, is who's paying for the gnome?
The gnome.
Then he actually clears his throat and says, "Excuse me, I meant halfling. You see, we actually have a gnome guest tonight."
That's weird. I'll pay.
He chuckles and he says, "I actually can't tell the difference sometimes." Okay, is everybody paid?
Yes.
All right. So the other guests.
So how much did you end up paying?
I just paid for the two of us. So one silver.
I got you back.
Oh, okay. So, okay. We're taking the dorm.
Yeah.
Got it.
So rooms 1 through 7 on the hallway here, those are occupied by the Graven and her party. The whole corridor is sealed off with guards posted at the points marked X on the map.
Mm-hmm.
You lot are given room... I just lost it. Oh, you are given... No, you all stay in the dormitory. So the dormitory is going to be room number 24 there. Okay. Right off of the main room.
Okay.
So we're downstairs.
Yep.
Okay.
Let's see here. All right. And we begin. The time is 9 o'clock p.m. It's been a long day of travel. You arrive at the inn. The Gravin Maria Ulrich and her party are already in residence, having arrived by both barge and coach. So her barge is tied up outside along the river, and of course you saw her coach coming in. Now, Bruno, our good friend, let me put this over here, we need some room for these lots of characters tonight. So Bruno Falk, the judicial champion of the Graven.
Okay.
Sits bare-chested at table A, which is, there's three main tables in the bar room here. And he sits there, arm wrestling with one of the guards. Others are gathered round, drinking and shouting encouragement. And Bruno wins easily. He is a strong, large man in his 40s. And he boasts out often that he will accept any challenges for the stakes of 2 silver or higher. He looks around the room, even checks you guys out as you come in, and he seems jolly. He's happy. He seems a little bit mischievous. He's ready to. He's having parties. He's drinking. And one of the guards ultimately decides to go in, and another round starts. And you hear just moments later the big thump as the guard's hand is smashed to the ground.
Educational moment for the evening. Graven is Dutch for countess.
Oh!
Thank you. Thank
and
you,
now
Heroes.
You know.
Knowledge is power.
Yeah. There are a variety of guards and the Graven staff who are floating around the common rooms, so we'll put them out here too. These are all people available to be... I wish this map was like the size of the table, then I could use all
I
these
know.
Things. I want to put like each of these people into each spot, but I think it would make it work. Now, I'd like anybody in the party to make an average plus 20 Empire lore check. Otherwise, you can make an intelligence check.
Reichland lore? Or
that'll
Empire?
Work. Reichland will work.
But an intelligence check will also work?
Mm-hmm.
Pass. Do you need to know the success levels?
Yes, please.
So with plus 20, I got 4.
Nice.
Neg 1.
Plus 20.
Like, hey, a cat.
I have a success level 1.
He's still distracted by the thought of a gnome being nearby.
Yeah.
Hey, what?
Where?
Okay, so with a 1 and a 4, the two of you recognize the name Maria von Leibowitz of Ambestine. What you have heard, Bernie and Einar, you guys both have this information. You have heard of Countess Emmanuelle's legendary parties. Now, Countess Emmanuelle, she is Maria Ulrich von Leibowitz is Countess Emmanuelle's niece. So, Countess Emmanuelle is a name that you have heard. That's like top tier nobility in Nuln.
Okay.
Nuln is one of the other the major the capitals of one of the southern provinces.
Okay.
This is her niece. Now you have heard rumors of Emmanuel's legendary parties, which are the wildest during Black Powder Week, which is a week long festival held in Nuln. Now, Einar, with your 4 success levels, you get a little extra. You've heard a couple extra rumors floating around.
Okay.
You've heard that. You've heard some gossip about this incident that's occurred in Nuln like a couple weeks ago. Baron Otto von Damenblatz, you'll want this name, Damenblatz.
Okay.
So Baron Otto von Damenblatz, he's a minor noble from the Duchy of Dunkelberg, was found dead, face down, in a punch bowl. And his son, Baron Eberhard von Damenblatz, has accused the Graven of causing his father's death through poisoning or witchcraft. Everyone in the Graven's party, however, believes that the Baron drank himself unconscious, slumped comatose into a punch bowl, and drowned. But such is the excitement that happens at the von Liebowitz parties. Okay. So, the Graven is potentially in some hot water.
Okay. And what was the son's name again, one more time?
The one who is accusing
yeah.
her is Baron Ibbenhart von Damenblatz.
Okay. Yep.
Let's see. Okay, and then also in the ballroom, as you enter, is a grinning halfling. We should make Duggars happy here.
Or is it the other gnome?
Well,
the one gnome.
All right, let me get the other gnome out here.
Right, oh, my gnome, God.
Sorry.
One gnome.
One gnome. Sorry, no. His actor actually is a gnome, so.
Oh, there's a gnome. All right.
Mercenolin's the seedling thorn cobble, who sits at table B talking to the Graven as she fingers a pack of cards. So the Graven and these folks are at a table. So let's keep them. Yeah, let's try and sort ourselves out here. These are probably less relevant now that we're inside. Okay. So we've got Bruno hanging out. Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is just put, like, Bruno's table's over here. Hans is over here. The guards are kind of common and scattered throughout. We've got the Graven and the Halfling at a table. Actually, I'll have Falk. Bruno and Falk and the guards are doing arm wrestling over here. Okay, so. Thorncobble, who sits at table B, talking to the Graven as she fingers a pack of cards. And as you enter the inn, the Graven shakes the halfling's hand and heads up to her room along with her guards. So we can move them upstairs. That'll be upstairs will be this side. Here, I'll do that here.
These guys?
Yep. The Graven and her guards.
One moment, please. Can I see if anything was exchanged in that handshake?
Oh, you want to know, do you?
Well, she shook hands with...
With the halfling.
The hot halfling.
Okay.
Yep, you can... You can make a perception check and see if you notice anything.
Nope, absolutely not.
Might have been tiny concealed. Hands. But she heads up and heads to her room along with the guards. She has just completed some kind of conversation with them. And Seedling's the nickname of the halfling there. She looks rather pleased with herself.
Okay.
Still seated at the table?
Yep, she's hanging out at the table.
Anybody
else? She looks like she's looking for someone to play cards with.
Anybody else there?
No, not right now.
And,
Don't worry about the second one there. The second name you have that hasn't shown up yet.
Okay.
They come as a pair, though, in the book.
I have nothing else to do at the moment. I'll just kind of nod at you guys, and I'm going to walk over and sit down at that table.
Which table?
With the half
table B.
All right, the half.
To start another game?
She willingly invites you in, and is anybody else joining in?
What are you going to say?
I was just making sure. This is B, and Bruno's at A.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So she says, you know, she introduces herself and she says, people call me Seedling. I'm of the Thorn Cobble clan. We're out of Altdorf. She says, she's looking to earn a little extra coin, wondering if you're up for a game of cards. But otherwise, she's also quite the chatterbox and kind of telling you how she's very excited. She was just hired to be part of a upcoming party by the Graven in Nuln, and is certainly delighted by that news and the opportunities that will present.
I will just kind of stoke that conversation with what I know about those parties and say, oh, I hear those are quite the shindig, you know? That's a pretty nice invitation. Are you a partier?
And she says, I like to kind of move around. I like to see what I can find in different towns and You know, my luck's been a little on the hard side lately, but I kind of like the looks of some of my upcoming opportunities.
I see. So have your fortunes gone your way so far this evening?
Well, she begins to kind of deal out some cards, and as she says, you want to throw a silver in and we'll chat some more?
Sure.
All right, let's do a gambling check here.
Is she drinking?
She is not.
If I offer to buy her a drink, will she?
Yes.
Fantastic, because I would like to use that to my advantage as the evening.
All right. You guys, so let's do a quick gambling check here. I should put a thumbprint or something into the...
I am skilled in such endeavors.
This is your forte.
Put something...
Not so good at gambling as I am as the gossiping, but I'm decent.
All right, so we are going to do a quick down and dirty gambling check here with Miss Seedling. Her gambling score is that much.
I got -3.
She got -1. All right, she earned your silver.
Okay.
All right, you guys spend the next few minutes playing some cards.
Can I, while we're playing, may I gossip with her?
Yes. What are you interested in?
Well, I'll just say we just arrived, and so as we're playing, I'll say, you know, have you been here for a while? Who, you know, what's all the hubbub, and who are all the folks here? You know.
Okay, go ahead and roll. She'll tell you what she knows. That's a good roll.
Astounding success.
So she admits she just arrived today, shortly before the Gravin's party did, and they kind of came up almost at the same time with the barge and the boat, or the barge and the carriage, and the last half hour has just been a cluster of activity with boxes and crates and gowns and people and all of her staff who are organizing all of these events and her retinue. And so she calls out a couple individuals of substance. She mentions, she points out the staff, which include, you know, servants, it includes guards, it includes coachmen, it includes boatmen. It also includes her her personal barrister, Gustav.
Okay.
And Gustav Recht Chandler, and you haven't seen him yet, but okay. She mentions him. Otherwise, there's a variety of staff floating about that she kind of points out.
Okay, fair enough.
And of course, Bruno Falk, her judicial champion. And are you guys kind of lingering over his shoulder while these conversations are happening?
I was curious about Table A. Is there open gambling going on these arm wrestling contests?
Oh, you're like betting on people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take a minute or two just to kind of watch people's hands after a victory, see where they're stashing coins. I might find my way into a pocket or two. I owe this guy a silver for tonight's bedroom.
Okay, so you're I'm gonna say for the time being you're scouting the room.
I'm just deciding what's going on.
And Bernie, how are you doing?
I'll take a seat and drink.
With Einar or with someone else?
The
two tables that have people of interest right now are Bruno's table doing the arm wrestling.
Can I sit with the barrister?
The barrister, you haven't seen him yet, but you know he's about.
I'll sit with the halfling, sure, and then Einar.
Okay. So then, Einar, you guys then collectively got that information.
Yep.
Okay, I think. So, some time passes on. 9:10. I'm going to call out the time several times, because this particular adventure is clock-driven.
Okay.
So, 9:10 rolls around. Three traveling scholars come in out of the rain. Sorry, Siri, be quiet.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Three traveling scholars come in out of the rain and hang their heavy cloaks and hats by the fire to dry. Mm-hmm. These guys enter. And they book a double room with Hans for the three of them and order three hot meals. They sit down at table C and keep to themselves quietly. So let's put them on the right or the left-hand side to represent a new table.
Yonder.
Perfect.
There we go. Oh, nice. I like that.
Okay.
All right. At this point, Patterson, you're...
kind of milling about right
you're,
there.
You've kind of set up one guy who potentially... He's won a couple coins on some side bets off of Falk, and he's got a coin purse that... This is one of the Graven's guards. And he's got he's got a coin purse that looks like it might be achievable.
Okay.
So the door opens to the inn a few minutes later, and another halfling arrives. Mm-hmm. Walks up to the front, books a place in the dormitory, and then sits down with Seedling to play cards. So that's the other individual in that picture.
Okay.
Though, so who's at that table right now?
Glibrin, Mercenellen, and these two, okay. And I'm standing off to the side.
Okay, so you don't see it. Okay, so the two of you see two halflings sit down. Though there's distinctly something different about the new arrival. Okay. You've seen halflings before. This looks like a halfling, but the proportions are all wrong.
Okay. I want to just make an intuition roll on this one to see if there's any like exchange of knowing glances between this one and the one that we were already here with.
They do not appear to know each other. They sit down and introduce themselves and begin picking up some chatter and talking gossip.
But no, like, grifter nods or, like, a wink or a nudge of the nose or anything?
Does not appear so at the first glance. Though you do sense that the that Seedling, while cordial with the newcomer, doesn't have the kind of typical openness you would see with another halfling. Like, there's not, like, this quick exchange of family names and everybody. There's not, like, the, oh, I know your uncle from the third party back in the moon. This, all that? The something's missing there.
Okay. I get what he's driving at, but my character's oblivious and I wouldn't care.
I'm going to notice as soon as I turn around.
Like, see West Side halflings. I don't know.
Okay.
Outside the tracks.
A few minutes later, a liveried servant comes downstairs and orders Bruno to stop arm wrestling in case he injures himself. Bruno stands up abruptly, towering over the servant, and tells him to mind his own business, and the servant quickly retreats back upstairs.
Now, since I was standing at that table, was that the same servant that was carrying the possibility?
No, that's one of the guards. One of her guards is downstairs with the money. The servant is, here's the servant.
That's one carrying the goodies.
Elza, the servant, is going to be the one who came down and said, no, you are, where's the guards?
The guards.
Oh, there's some,
they went upstairs.
That's right.
So there's a couple still hanging out downstairs. We'll call those the patrons.
Okay.
Here, one of the patrons. Coachmen, boatmen, and the like are down there.
Okay.
And you scouted one of them for... And you feel like at this point, whenever you're ready, you could try and make a move. So you just let me know when you feel like...
Probably
feel like approaching it.
Because how do I pull that off? Because I don't have, like, pickpocket.
It'd be a sleight of hand.
Okay, then that I can do.
Okay. All right. Are you going to go for it?
Yeah.
All right. Let me grab one of those guys. This is going to be an opposed roll.
Okay.
His perception versus your...
sleight of hand?
Sleight of hand. Thank you. All right. Let me just... Don't tell me yet. I got to find the stat sheet here. There they
are. Is there a jail in this inn?
Did you do poorly?
Uh-oh.
Don't forget your fortune points. You can re-roll a failed roll.
All right, they are at minus... No, they're at zero.
I am neg two.
Neg two. All right, so you can...
Fortune.
You can fortune to reroll, fortune to...
What if I, like, inadvertently cause some sort of distraction?
So, in theory, you don't know he's even trying this yet.
No.
He got caught while trying it.
All right, well, look, that's what happens when you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar. One fortune. Okay. All
right, so what are you going to do? Are you going to re-roll or are you going to...
Damn right.
Okay.
I act like I was just joking around, give him kind of a hug, and then go after it again. Oh, my gosh. Oh. Nick, two again.
Oh.
Brawl.
So the guard noticing it, kind of looks around and doesn't see what's at him, because then a couple seconds later he looks down and sees your hand kind of like, oh, and and you duck away, and he calls out for you and chases you around a bit, and once he finally gets hold of you, he's holding you by the scruff. You're like, what do you think you're doing?
I'm just trying to get money for room tonight.
And he says, like, oh, I should, and then, like, he starts kind of, like, deciding what to do with you, and some of the other...
you wouldn't hit a little girl.
Some of the other patrons start kicking in, and actually the other, the halfling, seedling there, kind of chimes in and says, like, hey, put him down. And she clicks over a silver to him to let you loose and invites you to come sit down at the table with them.
Okay.
You are a her, I'm sorry.
Girl.
So the two girls, she sees another, you know.
What does your hair look like? What kind of a girl are you?
I have chocolate colored hair and green eyes. And I have strength 14, so I imagine myself as a little 3'11", probably like 68 to 70 pound, like little thing that just doesn't.
So you're like a 10-year-old girl.
You're like a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right.
That's something to aspire to right there. Yeah.
Who likes to pick people's pockets?
So the guard kind of begrudgingly goes away and lets it go, and you join the card game and the conversation.
You.
And she shares a little bit about about herself and asks you about your heritage. What do you have to say? Because she introduces her as the Thorn Cobble Clan out of Altdorf.
Well, I don't normally tell the story because don't run into many halflings that might know, but it was long ago, had been ousted from the moot, had followed my parents, and ultimately turned into a bad situation where I don't use my true surname any longer. So you may know me as Madison.
She asks you, are you willing to share what family you're from? She might know you. Or she might know of your family.
I guess I don't see a real problem in it. She did just save my ass. I'm a slight bottom.
A slight bottom. She says she thinks she actually recognizes you. She hasn't never met you guys, but she's heard the name before. You guys have a pretty decent sized clan in the moot, don't you?
I did. At one point.
Well... She wishes you luck and invites you to kind of hang out and play cards with her for a while and have fun. You notice, though, that the other halfling who's at the table is definitely not a halfling.
Right.
It's a gnome.
Right.
Now, it's of similar size and stature.
So I'm looking at these two like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. And that guy looks a little bit different. He's a little quieter.
So, like, what is the social status of gnomes in the Empire?
Tastes like chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You eat them?
No, you don't eat them. That's right.
They are, I actually haven't read that part of this book yet, so I'm going to treat them similar to halflings at this point.
Like, I guess, what's the significance of her being a gnome? Because you keep calling it out, so I'm just
Well, I call it out in that humans can't really tell the difference. Yeah. They're both short people of similar height and
right.
stature.
Yeah, they're gnomes.
They look yeah. similar. You're familiar with halflings. Gnomes maybe are a little less common.
What dwarves?
But a halfling can instantly tell and can, like... Has no reason
He's
to
not
believe
one of us.
Why can't yeah. you tell the difference? It's so easy. Yeah.
It's okay. not one of us.
But humans yeah. kind of
And no, dwarves are like, not the same.
Gnomes don't
are
have like the
distinct.
Any standing really within the Empire, whereas halflings had the moot.
Right.
You know, they had
their
own territory.
I'm going to be honest, prior to this book, I didn't even know Warhammer had gnomes. I still don't think they do. This is the first I've ever
Are they
heard
like
of
the
it.
Ugly
so being...
stepchildren of like the halflings?
They're more like the elf version of a halfling.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
They're the wild.
That's
fair. They're a little more like fae.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fae is a good word.
Because like
yes.
they can use magic.
Yeah.
And they have a couple other elements. It's also with this book when it gets released is that they're introducing gnomes as a playable race too. So. Yeah. So a few minutes later, after the servant came down to tell Bruno to go upstairs, the Graven herself comes downstairs, and she has three servants along with her and orders Bruno up to his room. He obeys sulkily. A servant orders supper for the Graven's party. The guards and some of the servants eat at the bar while meals begin to be prepared for the Graven and brought upstairs for her champion and half a dozen of other servants, and the Graven's party retires upstairs. With the exception of, we've got the patrons and other people down here still. So I'm going to do a quick description here of the Graven for you, since she has this is the first time you've really got to see her speak in public. Calm, confident, and sure. Gravin Maria von Ulrich, Maria Ulrich, she's in her 30s. She exudes a quiet nobility of a woman born of power. Tall, blonde hair, cut short. She's dressed in the latest of fashions of their empire. She speaks Reichspiel, the native language of the Reichland. It is refined, but still has this little hint of a rising inflection, betraying her long winters spent in Nuln, which has a distinct accent. Outside, you hear a boat arrive at the pier. And then entering the inn comes a well-dressed man and a woman and two boatmen. They go up to Hans and they book a room under the name Johann Schmidt. And the boatmen are put up in the dormitory. The couple disappears upstairs without any supper or even a drink. The boatmen stay at the bar. And also join table A, which is the one that Bruno had just so frequently mm-hmm. been doing the arm wrestling. So let's put the patrons at table A now. And the boatmen can be heard chatting up at the bar with the guards, talking gossip, and really just kind of laying out the end of a busy work day.
Okay.
Shortly thereafter, the front door opens again. This time you see three travelers who have recently arrived by a cart, which you can see outside, and they are dressed in embellished black robes of priests of Mor. They ask for a double room for themselves and their charge. They announce to the innkeeper, Hans, that they are conveying a body for burial, and they ask to keep the body in their room.
Ew.
The barman is uncertain of this.
Is that normal?
And calls for the landlord to come over.
So leave it outside.
Somebody would steal it.
Well, I'd be checking his pockets. I mean, let's be honest.
So the barman is uncertain about this and calls for the landlord to come over. Coins are discreetly changed hands, and the Morians are given a room upstairs. The Morians bring in, they go outside and bring in a coffin. Here's a picture of what's going on here. Sorry. They bring in the coffin and go straight to their room as the inn patrons look on in shock. The priests tell the landlord not to worry about any noise in the night. They are required to pray over the body from midnight until dawn.
Can I make a perception to make sure that coffin looks sealed?
I too would like to make perception.
I'm wondering if there's a vampire up in this thing. What's going on here? That's spooky as hell.
I'm grossed out.
All right, so we can make a single group perception roll. You guys can assist each other with a +10. Choose who you want to make the roll.
I'm at 50.
You.
I was going to say that's got to be 45.
Okay.
I help you as well.
Okay. All
right, so you can +10 to your roll.
Okay, so 60. Oh, to my roll. Okay.
Did you make use of that 60?
Yes.
All right, good. Because it's a 64?
Yeah.
And what was your skill?
50.
Oh, so you got
60.
So
I neutral. If you give me the +10, I neutral.
If we do a dramatic check. Okay. You kind of observe them not being super familiar with human customs and the details of what a proper priest of Mor should or shouldn't do. These guys seem pretty legit. They talk in the proper ominous tones, and they cite various scriptures and things like that. They kind of have this mysterious presence about them that makes them a little uncomfortable to be near.
Is the top nailed down?
Oh, of the casket itself?
Yeah.
That's what I'm specifically looking at.
Hard to tell because it's a little bit ornamental. Okay. It does appear closed.
Oh my god, can I use my telescope that I can...
Mid-room?
Hold still! This close, you move really fast!
Let me focus. It appears to be a solidly built casket.
Okay.
It's hard. You can't tell from this angle, and you not knowing its construction if it's secured or not. But you you make your best outside guess that it looks solid.
Right.
A servant. Oops, sorry. That's I skipped a part there. Let's see. They go upstairs. Don't worry about stuff. Yep. Okay. The Morians have arrived and have come upstairs.
So you want to move them up.
Show them. All right. I'm actually going to fold up this thing. It doesn't seem to be necessary tonight. It gives us a little more room to put all these people where they go.
So these people are all upstairs now?
Yeah. So the Gravin's over here.
Just
on the
out
left
of curiosity,
side.
Not that I've been paying super attention, but do we know roughly where anybody else is staying other than rooms 1 through 5? Have we heard anybody say, oh, you'll be in the room on the left? Or have we heard any other, do we know where anybody is?
You know that the Gravin has blocked off this entire wing.
They've got that corner, right, yeah.
If you want to, you can gossip around the room, too, and acquire this information.
It might be good to know who's staying where.
Let's see, so the... Some of these are actually said. The man and woman, the Schmitz, have booked room 10.
Okay.
You guys are in room 8, right?
No,
you guys are in
24.
The 24.
You're right, you guys are in the dormitories. That's right, I'm sorry.
We're broke.
and the Morians book room 9.
Can we just write them on the sheet?
That's what I was going to say. Just pop them on there.
Sure. Let me get you guys like a Sharpie or something.
Because otherwise I'm just going to dictate.
No, that's fine. These are only going to get used for the night.
Okay, so we'll just do...
You want black or...
I can use my pencil.
Okay, this might just be easier to read or something.
Okay.
The priests of Mor,
room 9, and the Schmitz are in room 8.
They're
10.
10.
Oh.
The other even number.
Alright.
And then the Gravins.
She's got
Bruno
the whole
have
wing over
1
here.
Through 5.
Yeah, and the guards. The
are
guards,
those X's.
Yeah.
1 through 5.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't know who's in what room, but we know they have that whole.
But 1 through 7,
or 7.
She's probably in the big one.
Oh, okay. But my bad.
Yeah, it's all the rooms from here. This whole hallway.
Oh, okay.
1 through 7.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Big spinners.
So, some 15 or 20 minutes later, around 9:50, another individual enters the inn.
Okay.
I'm like losing track of people.
The This individual arrived on horseback, and after seeing her horse stabled, she enters the inn and books a single room, room 18. Despite her intimidating appearance, though, she seems friendly enough, and you hear her speaking. You overhear her speaking with the innkeeper, and she claims to be working for the Kemperbad Town Council, taking a confidential message to Nolm.
Room 18.
And she introduces herself as Ursula Kopfgeld.
And she's a messenger.
Okay.
Got an arrow sticking out of her. Message for you, sir.
Okay.
Upstairs. She does not go upstairs.
She's still down here.
We just know she's in room 18.
Yeah. She, sometime as she's gone in, one of the guards makes an improper suggestion to her, kind of flirting with her. She takes no time in flattening him quickly and efficiently. And the landlord steps in quickly to prevent a potential brawl. So 10 o'clock rolls along. A servant, who will be Eliza here, our good friend. Eliza comes down from the Gravin's rooms and orders all of the Gravin's party to bed. She announces they'll be starting at first light tomorrow, and reluctantly various servants and guards finish their drinks and drift off to the dormitory or upstairs where appropriate. At about the same time, one of the Schmidt, the male Schmidt, Johann, comes down for a bottle of wine, and on his way back to his room, he is approached by the Gravin's servant. You hear an inaudible but clearly heated exchange take place, and Schmidt afterwards hurries back upstairs looking angry, and the servant heads off towards the dormitory.
Huh.
So, just because I'm paranoid. At this point, when like the servants aren't paying attention because there's all these like tables full of crockery and stuff, I'm going to collect like a wine glass off of one of the tables, just kind of pawn it, put it under the table here, and just, you know, going to find some little something, like a little strip of a napkin that I'm just going to peel off to make a string. I'm going to tie it to the stem of the wine glass, and at some point I'm going to sneak upstairs and tie it to the door of the moor priests. On a bell, so if they leave,
and okay,
clang against the door. Okay. So when their vampire gets out of its coffin.
So the so over the course of the some amount of time, it just kind of, that happens over the next half hour or so as you take opportunity.
Yeah, and I'll kind of like say kind of fix it, and then I'm going to walk upstairs and just kind of look around.
Oh, so you're gonna head upstairs?
I am going to head upstairs, and I'm listening for the priestly.
So at what point during the is this?
I'm going to kind of follow him up. Like, okay. I'm going to do that while they're arguing. I'm, like, fixing my little string. And when he goes up and she goes off to the thing, I'm going to excuse myself from the table and go upstairs. Right. And I'm listening because they said they were going to keep praying all night. So I'm kind of listening for the room where I hear prayers.
You also take stock of what the upstairs looks like at this point. And, you know, you see the U-shaped hallway. You see the two guards stationed at the end of the hall that leads to the wing for the Graven.
Okay.
They look bored out of their minds, but they're there doing their job. And you get the sense that, like, if they were to have an opportunity to go, like, sneak downstairs for a quick drink or something, like, likely would happen.
Got it.
But otherwise, the priests are in 10, or are they in 9?
They're in 10.
Tens. 10, thanks. Okay, so the priests are right here.
Right at the top of the stairs.
Their room's currently quiet.
Okay.
If you recall, they had announced that they would be praying from midnight until dawn.
Okay. So I'm going to approach their door. I'm not trying to be subtle about it at all, like for the guards' purposes, right? I don't want them to hear me necessarily, so I'm trying to step lightly. But I look down at them, just kind of wink, and I'm like, they had a coffin. I'm going to tie the glass to the...
They actually kind of... They're like, yeah, we get it. It was weird to us, too. Like, they don't say anything, but you guys have that moment where you're like...
We were
concerned about that, too.
Okay. Cinch that up, and then I'm like, doff my cap and go back down.
They nod and smile at you. I think they're kind of curious about it as well. Okay, meanwhile, back downstairs... The night continues on a short while. Anything as you guys want to do? I'm just going to roll the timeline forward, and you interrupt me as you want to. If you guys have things you want to do.
Okay. As Einar went up, I will follow Eliza, the servant, because I recognize her as the one who's carrying possible valuables from earlier. Correct.
Yep.
I will then follow her into the dormitory just casually, as if I'm just going in to get to my own bed, and wander on in and see what she's up to.
She is currently. She seems. You think she might be someone of status within the servants. Maybe she's like the head servant, because she seems to be kind of communicating and telling the rest of the Graven's party what they should be doing or where they should be.
Okay.
So she's kind of like making sure certain people of the party have like retired for the night, settling some of the communications that need to take place, organizing some things for the next morning.
Okay.
Can we?
Does she lay down in there?
No, she doesn't appear to be. She came from upstairs, and with her status, you suspect she might have a room upstairs.
That's pretty much what I'm waiting for, is for her to go the other direction, so I can follow her up and figure out which one of these 1 through 7 she's in.
Okay, so you take.
If she's in charge of the box, we may want to know where that is later.
And Einar, do you come back downstairs after?
I do, actually. After having seen those guys, gross. But I come down and I'm like, oh, a couple. Half-finished pints.
So as you come downstairs...
combining them together.
As you're coming downstairs, you catch Madison coming out of the dormitory. But you also, as you guys are both downstairs and you're getting ready to go upstairs, Madison, you catch Bruno Falk, our good friend.
Okay.
Bruno Falk is coming downstairs... kind of quietly, or as best he can. He's kind of like in a little bit of an exaggerated sneak.
Can I say, aren't you supposed to be in bed?
So he's returning down to the bar, and he puts up a big, like, shh. And he's still a little drunk from earlier. He's grinning broadly and looks around theatrically and with exaggerated caution to make sure that nobody in the Graven's party is still there. And And then he orders a mug of ale at the table, telling the barman to keep him coming, and sits back down at table A with the two boatmen. So let's put him at the boatman.
Okay. I'd like to go try to talk to the scholars.
All right. You walk over to the scholars' table. They don't look up at you. They kind of, like, turn their bodies a little bit, like, back into each other so that they're trying not to really, like... They're trying to make it like it doesn't look like you'd like to sit. They'd like you to sit.
Can I sit down anyway?
Sure. There is a fourth chair to the table.
I'll sit down.
All right. They're dressed. They're dressed in.
I'm a little drunk now.
All three of them are human. There's two men and a woman, and they are dressed in gowns that you think you recognize as like a human scholar.
Yeah.
And they. It was the kind of stuff you'd see in, like, a library or something to that effect. You recall the human scholar, or the god of wisdom, is Verena. So they would be, they are priests or scholars of Verena.
I'll tell them I respect their scholarly natures.
Okay. The woman, she quotes... Some stanzas from one of the human Verena books, you suppose. It sounds a little clunky, but it speaks to justice and law and the pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah, that all sounds good.
The other two nod enthusiastically.
How do you find yourselves here?
We're traveling to Kemperbet.
Hmm. My companions and I are traveling, too.
Yeah, okay.
I've always wanted to talk to scholars of Verena.
Yeah? All right, are you trying to learn anything in particular or just get a sense of them?
Well, I mean, I'm certainly curious why they're traveling in a pack to a certain place, but I doubt they're just going to tell me.
Yeah, the older gentleman says, I don't mean to be rude, but this is kind of a private gathering.
I look around and everybody's kind of mingling with each other, and I was like, I didn't realize.
Yeah, they offer to buy you a drink and wish you a fun rest of your evening.
All right.
All right. So they kind of say the bartender's added it to our tab. You can pick it up at the bar.
Well, I thank you.
All right, and they quietly go back, and they one of them makes sure to, like, take the fourth chair that wasn't being used and moves it over to one of the other tables, and they, like, kind of, like, sit on one of them on the corner, so it's, like, no convenient spot to sit nearby anymore.
While she was doing that, I was taking my mixed-up table scrap mug of ale, and I take it back up to the guards upstairs, and I kind of walk up and walk. For the vampire watchers.
They smile at you and, like, shake your hand, and they're like, cool. You also get a chance to kind of look down the hallway.
Okay.
And nothing out of the ordinary. It looks like
a quick little glance. Yep. Make sure there's no, like, weird signs hanging on a door.
So back to Bruno, who's come downstairs. Bruno, let's see, orders his mug of ale, keeps him coming, sits down with the boatman, and after a few minutes, an arm wrestling contest quickly starts up again. And Ursula, who is the gal over there on the right, who came in on the horse, she watches for a while, and then announces that she wishes to challenge Bruno, putting 10 silver shillings down on the table, and sits down.
I'll watch that.
All right. We've got the crew watching. Have you come back
downstairs? I'm coming back down right now.
All right. So Bruno demurs for a moment, but accepts the challenge. The small crowd gathers, including the likes of you. Bruno's arm begins to go down, but he was being gentle with her. Mm. He quickly applies his full strength, and the contest begins in earnest. Neither contestant moves. A sheen of sweat breaks out over Bruno's forehead, but it is an even match. And then Ursula's arm starts to waver, and Bruno, no longer the gentleman, forces her arm slowly but surely down to the table. Bruno looks at Ursula with new respect, and the two of them smile and take some time talking and drinking together as the evening continues.
They're gonna be lovers.
Yep. It's Brienne and Tormund.
Oh my god, Tormund.
Is the big one gonna be there?
I take note of her because I'm impressed by her strength.
Yeah, she looks and is dressed and carries herself like somebody who travels the world and rides it hard. Somebody who's seen combat before. This is not. She's a tough looking character.
I will, as we're watching the arm wrestling, say, did you learn anything about the scholars?
Only that they really wish to not have any company whatsoever.
A few minutes later, another tray of fresh drinks is taken to Bruno's table. And is anybody else sitting at the table?
Just standing by watching.
I have to assume I'm back downstairs because I would have followed Eliza up before Bruno snuck down.
Yeah,
she would have seen him and then it would have all been broken.
Yep, you're downstairs.
So I'm back downstairs. Yeah, I'm just sitting at the table watching.
Is anybody at table E or is it open?
Table E is open.
So I'm going to sit there because we're watching with whatever he's doing, the arm wrestling, etc. But I'm going to take this seat and I'm going to basically try and see if I can learn anything observing the scholars. I'm basically trying to see, are they observing anybody in here? Are they... I'm kind of suspicious that maybe they're not scholars.
At this, from what you've seen so far and while you observe them, you gather that they are huddled amongst themselves, kind of attempting not to socialize with anybody, and have remained rather quiet since they've arrived.
But I don't notice them like scoping anybody out or paying any particular attention to one person down here or anything like that?
Nothing seems out of the ordinary
aside
from being private. They each have a glass, but it's very tepidly being milked.
They bought me a drink.
To get rid of you.
Yes, well.
So, some ale.
It was worth it. It's a drink.
Yeah, got me a drink.
Yep.
Some ale gets served at the table. Two of the soldiers who are rather, since the soldiers are upstairs, this will be the, one of the boatmen and one of the coachmen sit down and join in the arm wrestling competition, and they're all talking and having fun and talking about battles past. And you learn about Bruno that he's the judicial champion for the Graven. And some people don't know what that meant, so he kind of goes into explaining that there's often the nobles have a chance of trial by combat. And I am the one who steps in for them in that combat.
Mm.
And he says, it is my job to win those fights.
How many fights have you won?
He says, well, under the Graven, he's only had to do one other, but he's had former employers when he was younger who were a little less notable, and he's met with some success.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of goes on to explain that some of the battles are to the death, though that's very rare. You know, usually it's first blood or until somebody yields. But... it is, he's been fortunate not to have to be in any that were to the death. So, they all drink up. But the boatman starts coughing vigorously.
Is he choking?
And he starts grabbing his throat. And something's going on. He can't breathe. He's starting to look red and then pink, and he's starting to struggle.
He's choking, I'll yell out.
So everybody kind of quickly stands, chairs go flying, coins rattle to the ground, and someone like kind of lays him out and starts to like tend to him, and Bruno does his best, and Ursula also kind of steps up. She seems actually rather competent in mending wounds or tending to things, and she begins to like to work him and see if she can kind of help stabilize him. And she announces that he's been poisoned, something, and she kind of looks around. Something's amiss. She's looking for like what could have poisoned him, and she announces that the drinks that just came here, something was wrong.
Did he die?
While this is happening,
he's not dead, though he's having a very hard time breathing. She is attempting to stabilize him still.
I'd like to casually walk over if I happen to see a loose silver lying on the ground and just step on it. Just put my foot on top of it and look quizzically at what's going on at the table. I gotta get this guy a silver one way or the other. It's gonna happen.
Bad little girl.
I'm just going
do what
to.
You gotta do live.
I have no invested care for the specific guy. I just want to observe the room to see if anybody seems super casual.
You check the room.
Super casual.
Nobody seems super casual. But you do notice.
Is that
a plus 20 perception test might tell you something otherwise.
Super casual.
I got 2 degrees of success.
All right, that reveals that one of the Graven staff, not one that you particularly paid attention to up until this point, suddenly looks worried and leaves out through the kitchen through the kitchen doors.
Did anybody else seem to notice that?
No.
I get up and follow.
All right.
I shadow.
Oh.
All right, you step up and work your way behind the counter into the kitchen. No one really seems to stop you.
Okay.
You get in the kitchen. It's still in, like wind down mode. They're still serving food and drink though, but the cook is in there working away, and you see the back door, which would go out into the common area.
Out towards the river.
Out towards the river is that door is left kind of ajar. All right. Quiet as you can. Give me your stealth roll since you don't have to use an opposed roll now, right?
No, and I made it by another 2 degrees of success.
All right, you quietly make it outside. It's nighttime, though, and you have the lamps behind you illuminating some, and the trail goes...
I slip quickly through the door and step to the side so I'm not silhouetted in the door frame.
You make it out there, and you start looking around, and whatever trail you have has gone cold.
Okay.
So that was a lot to do in that one time chunk. I'm gonna advance our time period here. Madison, you were trying to scrounge coins from the ground.
Just yes, casually.
All right. In the commotion.
But super casually.
Just.
That's super casual.
You acquire.
Yeah. You're just sitting there. That's casual. If you're.
you managed
super casual.
You managed to acquire 4 silver. On the ground as you pick up this is probably some of the bettings and winnings that belong to Ursula and Bruno as part of saying that those are some of them.
They're drunk, they won't notice.
Meanwhile, the boatman who had been drugged appears to be stabilizing through some tonics and poultices and some treatment that Ursula had been providing. He is calmed down, he's in a chair, some people are tending to him. And the bar room kind of starts to regain its composure.
He's breathing and...
Can I look at, the table that he was at and see, did he have food, did he have beer, what did he have?
Everybody had... There's a round of drinks that had just recently arrived. Yeah. And then and you can see Bruno and, Ursula and stuff are, picking up the coins from the ground, picking up the chairs. One of them got broken. They're, replacing it with a different one. So... One of the priests of Moor comes down and goes over and speaks to the landlord.
They
walk very
Did your chime go off?
Oh, well, I guess it would. I'm sorry.
The alarm
I'm just
went off.
Probably like, hey, what the hell?
I mean, I'm not sure you'd hear that downstairs
no,
necessarily.
Not with this commotion.
Not with the noise. I was more like, hey, after everybody's going to bed, if we hear ding, ding, ding in the middle of the night.
Yeah, okay. So
we got some dude
he comes
dying
down
of poison at the
and
table.
Speaks to the landlord, and he walks with a very his hands are out holding a book and everything. And he mentions that I'm making an assumption here, so I don't want to do that.
Okay.
Are you guys trying to listen in?
Yeah, this guy freaks me out. I'm keeping an eye on it.
I thought you would be.
Yeah.
So you overhear a conversation. The initiate is expecting a boat to arrive during the night, and he wants the landlord to tell him the moment it arrives. The landlord agrees, and the initiate then returns to his room upstairs.
By now, I will return to the common room since I don't see anybody outside any longer.
Something happens immediately following that, I'm up here, I didn't catch it.
Okay.
As soon as the initiate has left and goes back upstairs, the initiate of Moor, Ursula stands up from the table, abandons whatever cleaning and organizing she was doing at the table there, and goes to speak with the landlord.
Okay.
You can overhear her talking about the priests of Mor. And he is telling her what they had told him.
Okay.
A few coins change hands, and Ursula goes back to Bruno's table.
Okay.
So she paid him.
Yep.
Okay.
And then she goes back to the table.
I'm going to, as I come back in, just kind of survey the room, see where everybody's at, make sure none of these guys are in trouble or anything. And I'm going to approach her, introduce myself, Ursula.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say, you know, how is... She's the one that was tending to the poison guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, how is your charge doing?
She says, he will live.
I will just kind of lean a little closer and say, one of the servants looked particularly upset when you declared poison left out through the back door.
I made note of this. And who are you?
I will gesture to my traveling companions and say, you know, I am a servant in one of the lesser noble houses of Ubersreich.
She says, I have traveled quite some time. Hopefully the rest of the night will not be so busy.
Indeed.
And you catch, obviously, her thick accent, the sounds like from the northeast of the Empire, maybe Oslin, maybe Kislev, hard to say. She seemed capable with everything that she was performing there. She seems like she knows.
I will, so I'm actually a noble, right, but I'm acting as a servant in my role as a spy, but I will give her, just in case she's paying attention, I will let slip like maybe a couple of words in our exchange that wouldn't be something a servant would use, to maybe like drop the hint that I'm noble.
Hmm.
Just okay. Seed it.
Yeah, she takes note of it. She seems to be picking up pretty quickly on clues. And she's a little confused by that one with you, but she takes note of the discrepancy.
Okay, and then I'm just going to kind of go back to observing her.
All right. 10:25. One of the Graven's servants comes down.
The same one?
Eliza comes down, and she orders Bruno to bed, explaining that the Graven checked his room and found him missing. He returns.
Mom.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not understanding the relationship. Why is this grown man taking orders from?
Well, he's the mountain, and they don't want him to get hurt doing something stupid and not be able to protect the
group.
But
he's the mountain. He's not supposed to give a crap.
Well, still an employee.
Yeah, I mean.
So, like, she tells him when to go to sleep.
Yeah, it's nighttime. Let's go to bed.
I find this odd.
And he's...
Doug's got it.
He's a protector. He's the house dog. He's who you sick on the mailman or whoever comes to the front door. You don't want here.
If he's all hungover and stupid,
you can't have him out of sorts. He's got
to
be ready to go.
Yeah.
But if he's the kind of guy who, like, tends to drink and get, like, shit-faced, why would you hire him?
Because they're the best fighters, frankly.
My point is I think it's a weird relationship. My character is going to think it's a weird relationship.
I already told him he should have been in bed. I mean, so I don't care how big he is. He's not scary to me.
Well, I mean, if you guys put together some of the pieces you have so far, you know, we got...
Is he simple?
That's up for debate still. But the... You know, if we have some of the clues, why is the Graven... What's going on with her?
Yeah, is she expecting him to have to fight tomorrow?
It sure seems that way to me.
So
it's like you need
fight?
To keep yourself fresh.
Who is he going to fight?
I don't know. I mean,
the night is young.
These are questions.
I'm looking for coins on the ground. I don't really know what the hell's going on over there.
All right, so next.
All right.
10:40 rolls around. 10:40. Gustav Rechtschandler comes downstairs. First time you guys have seen him in the evening.
Where'd he come from?
The barrister.
All right, let me give you guys a quick overview of Mr. Gustav.
Is he wearing a wig, or is this like a natural coif?
Looks like Baron Munchausen.
That's a good question. It is a natural hair.
Oh.
Finely kept.
Does he curl that himself?
Probably.
What did they use for curlers back then?
Dwarven bones.
Heated them.
So Gustav...
Gnome femurs.
Gnome femurs.
Gustav comes downstairs, dressed in a nightshirt and a silk dressing gown.
Okay, so he's been in bed.
As he enters the bar room, one of the three scholars of Verena leaves their table and heads upstairs.
Which one?
The old man,
or the female, or the other?
Let's go with the other.
Okay.
Is the other a man?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Gustav orders a brandy.
There's a bunch of girl names.
Yeah,
that's why I was confused.
That's why I was also confused.
Oh, what are the names that we can
call? Helga, Aurelia, and...
Elfoys?
And the old dude.
Elfoys?
Well, maybe it is two girls. Then.
It looks like two girls and a dude. That's why I was curious.
Okay. The middle name. What's the middle name?
Aurelia,
Elfoys, and Helga.
Elfoys.
So this will be Elfoys. Not that you guys know her name, but that for identification purposes, we'll use Elfoys.
So she goes upstairs when Gustav comes down.
Yep.
Okay.
And then, so Gustav orders himself a brandy from the bar and then takes it back upstairs to his room.
Did the other, not that maybe our spy should be checking this, but did the other two scholars give Elfoys the old, aw yeah, go get some, like when she went upstairs? Because he came down and she went upstairs and he ordered a drink. It was just
so were you paying it? Hard to say if you were paying attention to them when this happened. You had no reason to look at them ahead of time.
No. But there's movement in the room.
Yeah.
And people are getting poison all around me. So yeah, I'm paying attention to what's going on.
Let me make me a perception check.
I want to try to catch him if I can.
I certainly perceived it quite well.
Okay, so the individual quietly got up from the table.
I want to try to catch the barrister on his way. He's going back up to his room?
Yes, with his brandy.
Does he look like a barrister?
Like, outside of, like, his silk white nightgown that he's wearing, like, you know, maybe from the shoulders up, he looks like
Scrooge going to bed.
It looks exactly like Ebenezer Scrooge going to bed. You suspect visually, that you're having a hard time picturing it, because you can't get his, see what he's like with his clothes on.
Okay.
Are you you're following him, you said?
Well, I wanted to catch him and try to talk to him because I've always wanted to talk to a barrister.
All right, you do. You catch him. He's walking upstairs and notices you, and he says, what can I do for you?
I start chatting his ear off about, you know, like the legal process and the trial that we were in before and what happened and how
it's
I was
called Wanda. Archie.
How I was treated unfairly and like justice doesn't want
so
to
he
seem
quick,
to listen.
He quickly interrupts you often as you're describing the situation, and he speaks with a very polished accent.
Uh-huh.
And he's in his like late 50s, and he interjects and speaks to the law of what should have happened or what would happen or what he would have done in that position.
Yeah.
And lays out kind of the sequence of events that would naturally follow that should result in X, Y, and Z. And you continue to say what happened, and
can I sue them? I say
he corrects you often, saying no, this is how this will go, and several of the things that you propose. He rephrases as if it was his idea and gives it back to you.
Okay.
After that short conversation, he doesn't stop. He continues to walk upstairs as this is happening.
Uh-huh.
By the time that happens, you're at the spot where the two guards would be standing, and he's ready to continue walking through, and the guards are looking at you, expecting you to not follow.
Okay. It was good meeting with you.
Yes, it was nice talking to me, too. I mean, you as well. I'm sure you had a great conversation. Okay, so you were upstairs.
I am.
Because you followed him upstairs, right?
I thought the guards stopped me from
You got stopped That's here, okay. but you are still upstairs.
Okay, so...
I'm upstairs.
You are. What is the middle cultist... Oops, there's a Freudian slip right there. What's the middle
Elfoys?
Scholar? You heard nothing.
Oh man!
You heard nothing. That's the problem here, because in this they write everything with like their actual identities.
Uh-huh.
So sorry. One of the Elfoys stops, and since Bernie is upstairs, you see this right in front of you. Actually, knocks on the door of Rex. Rex Chandler's room.
Rex Chandler. Who's that again?
That's the him.
Oh, Gustav. Okay, yeah.
A few minutes later, or he then answers the door, and there is a brief exchange of words, too low to hear. But the scholar is ultimately admitted into the room.
Okay, so Elfoyes goes into the barrister's room.
Yes. What are you doing in the meantime?
And the guards let him in there.
Yes. Like the scholar asked to see the barrister, and after a few exchanges, they allowed him through.
They've watched it. I will look around and take stock of the current state of upstairs.
All right. So you can hear
casually.
So a minute or two later, as you're kind of just observing around, you hear the two guards in front of you. They're looking at you and kind of what's going on. They're looking at each other like maybe we could sneak down for a quick drink, and they do it. And they say like, can you keep an eye on the things for a minute?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll be right back real quick.
Enjoy yourselves, boys. They
quietly like walk off to not make the boards creak and everything until they get to the stairs, and then you hear them like. So a minute or so passes, and you hear raised voices from Gustav's room, the barrister's room.
I will listen keenly.
You go up to the door. Do you are you gonna listen from the door?
Yeah, sure.
All right, give me a perception check. You can get plus 20 to your roll.
Plus 20, I'm at, so plus 20 meaning that's a 30?
I can't see what those are from here.
It's a 50.
Okay, what's your score?
50.
So it's either add 20 to your target number or...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, so you hear Gustav saying in angry tones that he will not submit to blackmail. Mm-hmm. And then the others says that he has no choice. And then abruptly, the conversation goes quiet.
Can I hear any sounds, like, coming from the room besides voices?
Nope, it just went quiet.
I will continue to press my ear to the door until I hear steps.
Okay. So, meanwhile, downstairs, the two guards come down. They say hi to a few people and order themselves, like, two drinks each so they can each carry them upstairs.
Okay. This is going to take an upward nod. Okay.
To you, Einar, as they pass by.
This is going to take me a minute, but I have an idea. I've been trying to figure out like what to do because I still think that these guys are weird. But I have an idea. So here's my idea, and this is what I'm working on for like the next 10-15 minutes.
Okay, perfect.
So I take a pad of paper, like because I have my sketchbook that I draw in, and I'm going to basically the medieval equivalent of a Sudoku puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm a supernumerator, so I could easily. Basically, I'm going to, like, reverse it, right? I'm going to fill the numbers in and then erase a bunch of them out so I know what the solution is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And basically, when that's all done, I'm going to go over to their table and sit down and go, can you help me with this blasted puzzle?
Let's solve this together.
And put it out there for them. And basically, I want to see how they react.
Uh-huh.
And then as a cover, I'm going to point at anybody that's available and say, they bet me a silver I couldn't figure this out by midnight.
Got it.
So that's what I'm doing.
Okay, so you started that.
Yes.
Okay. So a few minutes later, upstairs, the guards are still ordering their drinks, but upstairs, Bernie, you're at the door, and you hear some footsteps from inside coming towards the door.
Okay, I'll sidestep out, kind of like where the guards were standing.
Okay, so he is in room 3. So he's here.
Okay.
And here, if we want to put on, where is Rex Steindler? He's around here somewhere. You can put room 3 on him if you like. He is now upstairs too, so let's bring him up here.
Okay. Oops.
We'll put him maybe right here. Okay. So he quietly opens the door of his room and looks outside and quickly sees you.
I look super casual.
he says. He says, I thought I heard something outside, and then he closes the door.
I'll sneak back over.
And And more time passes. And now the two guards are working their way upstairs, and they come back and take their position. They set their two drinks down on the ground near them, take one of them and sip on it occasionally. They've got their backup drink for a little bit later in the evening.
They don't mind me listening at the door.
They notice you and say, what's going on over there? What are you doing in front of the barrister's room?
Can I get a sense of them? Are they, like, just doing their jobs, or do they have more ties to the people they're guarding?
They give me an intuition roll.
Okay.
Intuition.
Here we go. Ooh, no, I fail.
They look like common guards, but you do know distinctly they are in the employ of the Graven. That's known.
I'll tell them, I was just hoping to catch Barrister Rex Chandler. I had some, you know, legal questions that I wanted to talk over with him.
And they say, I'm sure you can talk with him in the morning. They gesture for you to get out of the hallway.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll leave.
All right.
Go home. Go back downstairs.
All right, you head back downstairs.
But I will find Einhart and tell him about what I heard and what I saw.
Curiouser and curiouser.
So a few minutes later, Mr. Schmidt, is he out there? Where is he? Oh, thank you. Upside down is difficult. Mr. Schmidt comes downstairs looking worried.
Is he looking for Eliza?
He actually comes up to you guys, and he kind of looks at each of you. And he's an elderly gentleman. He carries himself with the status of probably a noble, though he's a little on the kind of greasier side of nobility.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks to you guys and decides to look to you, Einar, and ask if you'd be willing to take a message to the dormitory for him.
Sure.
Yeah, he says, if you more than happy to give you something for your trouble, and fingers through his little purse pocket, kind of not really caring what comes out, but a small pocket of coins, ends up being 5 shillings.
Okay, I will take it.
I want you to go to the dormitory and give this to one of the Graven's servants, please. And he says it would be Miss Hans Erpresser.
One second. Hans Erpresser.
And please tell them that Schmidt wants to see him. And he says Schmidt as if he's emphasizing that.
Hans is who?
One of the servants.
He's a Graven servant.
Schmidt wants to see him. Okay.
Who's very currently well staying in the
having garden. Been paid, Schmidt goes back upstairs. Or goes back upstairs.
I will not. I don't even know what I've been handed. Is it a letter? Is it an actual parcel? What is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is
just the message.
The verbal message.
Just a verbal message only.
Schmidt wants to see you.
Okay, then.
Because he couldn't walk from your table to that door and tell him yourself.
Okay.
Huh. Okay.
I'll take the money.
And run.
I get up, briefly pause from finishing up my puzzle. I'll turn back to that in a moment, but I'll go over there to inspect the dormitory.
I can deliver the message if you want.
Alright. I'm curious.
You guys can all go if you want. Yeah. But,
maybe I'll get impatient as I do, and while he is fiddling around with his math thing, I'll go, find this.
Yeah, I've already gone. You follow?
Oh, you've already.
That's
gone?
What I said. I paused on my puzzle for a minute.
Oh, I thought you were staying there.
So while that's going on, also one of the other guards from upstairs comes back downstairs and he tells the bartender that they forgot to order a certain drink they want. They get like an additional like hard liquor in a couple mugs, and he takes those two and brings them back upstairs.
Muppet runs back upstairs.
Was this one of the guards in the hallway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
They're
so
gonna get passed out drunk soon. Yeah.
Chris, did I hear you are?
I'm in
you
the
are
dorm.
Going, so you open up the dormitory, and you walk in. There's a whole series of beds, either bunk beds or straw beds and bed rolls. This is the common room. This is where you're sleeping tonight, too.
Yeah.
Rather crammed, no privacy whatsoever. There's several individuals here, men and women. And you...
I look at somebody who looks awake and friendly.
Mm-hmm. And there's many.
And I'll just kind of point at the crowd and say, do you know which one is Hans? Hans, sir?
And they point to Hans, and Hans looks up, and he's one of the servants still wearing some of the livery of the Graven's party, and says, yes?
Message for you, sir. And I smile.
He says, well, out with it. What is it?
Schmidt has asked to see you.
He smiles a little bit, and he says, all right. And he walks out of the room.
All right.
And... appears to be heading for the staircase.
I follow him back to the common room because that's where I was. And
is it empty now, the dormitory?
No, the dormitory's got 20 people in there.
Does he do himself up, like button up his shirt or anything? I know you said he was still wearing some of his.
I'll go with yeah. He cleans himself up to make him presentable.
Okay, I just kind of note that as he starts to head upstairs, and I'm gonna go finish up my puzzle and. I'll say, well, there's Hans.
Well,
if you want to.
There
keep an eye,
he is.
If you want to keep an
Hans
eye.
Hans goes upstairs.
I'll follow him.
All right. The dwarf goes
I'll
up as well.
I'll go back upstairs.
So Hans goes up and is admitted in past the guards as because.
I'll bring the guards another drink while I go up.
All right, so you spend a minute ordering a drink.
Yeah, I'll
okay,
order.
So Hans was up then before.
Actually,
you.
Are there any just laying around on the tables?
Like half drunk?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll pick some up. I'll like pour them so they get full, and then I'll head it up to the garden.
All right, so you're
going to be so
you're a couple. You're like 30. Beer. You're like 30 or 30 seconds or a minute behind.
Yeah.
Behind Hans then. So you work your way up. He goes upstairs just as you're running up there. As you get to the top, he's already rounded the corner and is heading down the hallway. You get to the guards, look down the hallway, and you see that he knocks on the door and is admitted into the room straight away.
Which room?
Which room?
Room 3, the barrister's room.
Barrister, okay.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry, Schmidt. My bad.
Room 10. Straight,
okay.
Straight up.
He knocks and is admitted straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And you come up just in time to see the door close.
Okay.
And what are you doing?
Hand off the drinks. Well, are the guards, what are they doing?
Guarding.
I mean, are
drinking.
They... Right, like, are they drunk yet?
They're in the process of kind of sipping and joking with each other. Quietly, like, giggling and quietly, like, trying to...
Like, I came up, so are they going to make me go back down? Or, like, are they not paying attention?
So again, the staircase is here.
Uh-huh.
They are only guarding this wing. So they're not telling you to... They're just guarding any... Anybody going past here?
Don't jump ass.
So your room 10 is right here. That's in the common area.
Okay, well, if they're not paying any attention to me...
Like, they're watching, but otherwise they're not stopping anybody.
I'll just see if I can hear anything coming from the door.
Right. You go over in here. Give me a perception check. And if you're putting your ear to the door...
This should be your husband's next adventure.
It'd be another plus 20.
I know, right? Totally. Actually, there was something on the list that... Oh, no, it was a magnifying glass. But yeah, that'll be the next adventure, for sure. Okay, my intuition roll...
No, perception.
Oh, perception. It's the same. I don't think I rolled very low. I did not.
So all you do here is one...
Like a gunshot?
Like a thump.
No scream, no sound otherwise.
No other sound than that.
A thump.
A single thump.
Okay. I'm going to knock on the door and then step aside.
Housekeeping.
Everybody okay in there?
You hear some people talk. You hear two voices inside whispering to each other. And then you hear the man's voice. Who is it?
Barkeeper! Complimentary drinks for you!
We didn't order anything. Thank you. We're good. We'll see you in the morning.
But I have them!
Right, thank you. We don't need any more. Thank you.
Everything okay in there?
Everything's fine. Fine, thank you.
It's a boring conversation.
Oh, I was really hoping they'd open the door. I'm still standing with my, like, beers.
Like a good dwarf, beer in each hand.
Yeah.
Nobody questions it.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a dwarf, like, 3 or 4 right. times as many human beers to get anything out of it. So.
I'll go talk to the guards. I don't know.
All right, you go back and talk to the guards.
I'll give them the drinks.
They chat with you. They're more than happy to chat with you at this point.
Do they have any gossip?
Yeah, they tell you that they're... that this whole train for the Graven is working their way up to Kemperbad because the... I'm sure it's Kemperbad. Is that right?
That's where the scholar was going.
Everybody's headed.
The day of the trial. Yeah, Kemperbad. For the trial. And, it'll be interesting. The Graven's been sued before, but she's likely going to... She's chosen to use trial by combat to resolve this one, so it'll be a interesting day seeing Bruno flatten another person.
That's why he needs to stay in shape.
Who's he fighting?
Well, we don't know who the champion of the Dabenblatt's house will be, but
the Dabenblatt's. Okay.
They're the family who's
accusing.
Seems to have it out for the Graven.
Right. They're the ones accusing her of poisoning the Baron.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, behind you, Schmidt cautiously opens his door to see if anybody's in the passage, and sees you talking to the guards, and then quietly closes his door.
This is the point where I tell you the end of the plot. He's Dabenblatt's. Schmidt's such a fake last name, and when he said Schmidt's asking for you, and he accentuated the Schmidt, he's not Schmidt. He's
so you think he's the son?
He's the son with the dead dad in the punch bowl. Don't know who the girl is. Maybe it's really his wife. I don't know.
But what was the thump?
Somebody got whacked.
Well, we haven't seen Gustav.
Or the servant that went up there.
Or the servant.
Yeah.
So it obviously wasn't him going down.
So have you guys reconvened downstairs now if you're having this conversation?
Well,
sounds like.
Apparently so.
Yes.
Okay.
I forget I'm downstairs.
I call them on my cell phone. Yeah. Hey, guys.
Okay, that's the next invention.
Yes, so that's right.
Pigeon comes flying down.
Yeah, one that just quickly goes back and forth, like delivering
just
a note.
A box with you hold up to your head and then let the pigeon out.
It flies off with a... taped to its ankles. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I'm curious where the dwarf went, so yeah.
All right, so you guys spend the next few minutes downstairs trying to sum up what the heck's going on here. One of the Graven's servants comes down and approaches your table, with the three of you at it, and says that... Gustav, the barrister, has asked to see you.
Oh, I say excitedly.
And she says, if you'll follow me, please.
Sure.
Let's go.
All right. Madison, you look suspicious.
Yeah, I don't really like this one at all.
What could happen? He's a barrister. He's an agent of the law.
Okay, I know what... Okay. Somebody just went upstairs and just got conked. Well, I assume they got conked.
You don't know any of that.
I don't know
any of
that.
Well, no,
I did. She just said I heard a sound.
Well, the barrister was also saying to somebody that I overheard that he didn't want to be blackmailed. So I'm definitely curious about that.
There's something going on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are you agreeing to follow upstairs?
I will follow.
So the servant
guides. I'm curious enough.
The servant guides the three of you upstairs. Past the guards who smile and nod at you, and they do their best to kind of keep themselves composed and like looking professional as the servants walk past. And then as soon as you guys walk past, you can already hear like their posture sag and like lean up against the walls.
Yeah.
And you're led down to room number 3.
Okay.
And the servant knocks and opens the door, and you hear Gustav inside say, yes, yes, please, please come in. So here we are with Gustav in room 3. He explains that the travelers, and he puts that in air quotes, in room 10 here,
uh-huh.
are blackmailing him. And he's hoping perhaps you would be willing to help him out with that.
So I know for a fact that it's not the travelers, but I'm going to keep that to myself. Wait, the travelers being Schmidt or the travelers?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, so I know it's not Schmidt. Well, at least I know somebody else was in the room when blackmail happened.
Are the Schmidts in room 10?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, right here. The boat. Yep. The boat.
Oh. Give me that sheet.
Elfoe's.
This one?
Yeah, no, the one.
Oh. Elfoe's was the one who was in the barrister's room when they were talking about blackmail. I wrote it down.
I gave you guys a wrong piece of information. I need to correct here.
Oh.
Instead of room 10, the travelers in room 11 are blackmailing him.
Oh. Okay.
We don't know who's in 11.
Yeah,
pay attention to that. 10 and 11, I have to swap on here because I gave you guys the wrong number early on. So that your information is still correct.
Is Schmidt in 11? Is that what you're telling us?
Schmidt is in 10.
Okay, still
so
in
we
10.
Don't know who's in 11.
So we don't know who's in 11. Okay.
Yeah. The travelers. Okay.
The
Gozer, the traveler.
But so then I didn't see Elfoe's going to the barrister's room.
Barrister's room is all still good, yeah. That happened.
We're all good, it's just the numbers are flipped. So we're just changing the last thing.
All your guys' numbers are correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. He says, what he just tells you right now
is 11.
Is that the travelers from room 11
are blackmailing
him. Are blackmailing him.
Who are the travelers?
He says that he is not 100% sure who they are specifically, but the organization they belong to he thinks sounds familiar. He said they were part of a learning organization from back when I was younger, and they were called the Ordo Ultima. And they were a group of scholars that I worked with regularly, but they were, at one point in my past, they had asked me to get involved in some groups that I was not comfortable with and ultimately left the organization, but they don't seem comfortable leaving it at that.
So what do they have on you?
So he says, interrupting you with not really wanting to get into that, he says he'd be happy to offer 20 gold crowns if you can dispose of them.
What, Jackson fools.
What makes
20 golds? That's a day right there.
Why consult us?
Well,
disposable. That's fine.
He says your lack of involvement in this situation actually makes it ideal to quietly have a business transaction occur. I don't want to get myself any more involved in this than I already have. So, what do you say? Is this something you can help me with?
So, what specifically do you want us to do?
I don't want them to come. I don't want them to bother me again.
Why didn't you just tell them not to bother you?
Could you please not mug me this evening? I would like to go about my evening.
Just, you know, like, I feel like there's some interpersonal, like, problem solving that you could attempt here.
I glanced sideways at the dwarf. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
He says,
I'm
with
still
a,
drunk a little.
He says, he says, unfortunately, my position and status with the Graven make my actions a little bit more public than I would prefer they be, and this is a situation I can't openly pursue and put away.
So, you've asked. So you have an obligation to at least answer this question. What is it? What thing do they have? What document or proof do they have to blackmail you with? Because I'm sure you're going to need that back in order to ensure that the job is done.
He says, if you can show me that they... He thinks for a minute and says, all right.
Rumors and accusation go only so far. If we can remove the proof, what is this proof that we need to get?
Prove to me that this is done by telling me what's on their chest.
I will inquire, like, on their chest? He or says on you, their he's, chest?
Their chest.
Are they tattooed men, or are we talking about a box with some locks and stuff on it?
He says, what's on their person?
On their person, their chest. Okay, so they're tattooed.
But that still doesn't tell me what thing that they have to prove.
It's going
to
be a picture of something.
Or a document, a signature. What is it that they have?
He says it's nothing physical they have. It's the stories and knowledge that they hold about my past.
I'm going to decline.
So I just got to catch one of these guys at bath time? I'm in. Let's figure it out.
No. That's to prove the job was done. They also need to never bother me again.
I'm a little girl. How am I supposed to kill these
guys? Yeah, well, I'm afraid you've got
the
wrong party.
I don't think this is the right group
for
this.
He's lying. We all know he's lying because you guys know what I know.
That's a fair point.
We don't necessarily... No, because remember, we don't know who's in room 11.
So, you said that Elfoy's going into the barrister's room still
happened. That's room 3, though. That's the
room you're in right now.
That's
right.
What we're in right now.
I know, but that's the room where they were talking about the blackmail.
Yep.
Elfoy's and the barrister were talking about the blackmail together.
Elfoy's was accusing or trying to extort the barrister.
Right. I know.
Yep.
So I know that.
Yep.
So now the barrister is lying and saying somebody else is trying.
Not necessarily.
They're in room 11. Dun, dun, dun. That's what's going on. They're the travelers.
Yeah.
Oh. How do we know that?
Well, it's a simple deduction. Everybody else has already been identified.
Right, okay.
He just said Elfoy's is the one who is blackmailing him. Elfoy's is staying in room 11 with the travelers.
Oh, okay, well then he's not lying.
Maybe we assume.
We're going to knock on every room.
I decline. This conversation never occurred.
He sighs visibly. He's a little distraught by this, but he does make one last attempt, and if he could... up it to 25, would you consider?
I will not. I will not become a murderer for any amount of gold.
He sighs again and says, "Can I trust that we keep this to ourselves then?"
Keep what? And I turn and leave.
He smiles and said, "He'll remember that," and hopes he can trust you. And you guys leave and go back out into the hallway. Meanwhile, as you return back downstairs...
Did his room have anything interesting in it?
It's a traveling room with its... He has a couple chests and, you know, a little wardrobe thing. He looks like he travels in relative comfort. You know, it doesn't look great, but it's like, you know, noble's chests and things like that. And people have, like, the gold status that he's living in. He's slumming it in this room, but the stuff he brings around with him is quite elegant. He's got... law books and things like that, and like chests all lined up nicely. When you return downstairs,
can we get a time check?
Yes, it is.
Gotta be after 11.
Did I lose my spot here? No, I'm at the bottom of this one. It's 11:15.
So can I go before? I know you have something to do, but can I go spring my math puzzle on the remaining two scholars?
On the other two, you may, but this happens right before that, because this happens while you're upstairs.
Okay.
While you're upstairs, you come back downstairs, Ursula is not in the common room anymore.
Oh.
Okay.
Alright.
And we didn't notice her come upstairs?
Nope.
And we were standing at the top of the stairs, so yeah, okay.
Okay, so now you want to go spring your puzzle trap.
Yep.
So you go over to the two remaining scholars who are sitting at the table. There's, of course, one empty seat now.
Okay.
And you go and sit down.
I'm like, oh, perfect. So I just sit down.
And I'm like, they look up at you like they were mid-conversation waiting to do something.
Sure.
And they're like,
And I'm totally just looking at my book like this is just such a casual, like, who cares, right? It's only a moment of your time. Mm-hmm. I've got my drink in my hand, and I'm like, Priest of Verena, right?
Scholars.
Fantastic. Could you help me with this? I have some money riding on it. I have to finish it by midnight or I'm going to lose. This seems like something you should be able to just...
What are you going to lose?
I proffer the
cash. They both look at it. And, okay, maybe let's get a charm check going here.
Okay.
Let's see. Let me get the scholars. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, plus 4.
Okay.
Plus 3.
It's charm straight up, not gossip?
Nope, no gossip.
Okay. I'm going to spend a fortune point reroll. All
right. So they're at plus 3.
I'm at plus 2.
All right. They say, well, You kind of talk back and forth. They ask a couple questions, trying to make it as short as possible, but realizing you're not going to go away,
yeah.
They say they will take it and take a look at it, but would like some privacy. They'll get back to you.
Like, there's only like 40 minutes. You think you can handle it?
And then one of them said, well, can you hand me their sheet there with their names?
We got Alrella.
Alrella and Helga. Helga says that Alrella is really good with numbers.
Yeah.
She should be able to figure this out for you. You know, they got a few things they got to do first, but they'll make sure they get back to you before midnight.
Don't leave me hanging.
We'll see what we can do. And then they kind of shuffle you off.
What is going on? Is somebody there?
Bunch of dogs just walked went by. All right. There is a great hammering on the inn's main door. The landlord walks over to the door, refusing to open at first, but it seems that someone is prepared to break down the door if necessary to get in. Okay. And when the door is ultimately opened, a well-dressed but fairly drunk mustachioed man comes in, accompanied by three aggressive-looking men. Here we have these folks. Mr. Thomas Pramhandler and Mo, Lars, and Curls. The newcomer, Thomas, demands to know which room belongs to Friedrich von Pfeffrauscher, which is left somewhat on deaf ears.
Who?
When he's told by the innkeeper that there's no one there staying in the inn under that name, he pauses. Well, his barge is moored right outside, he slurs. So we'll just have to look for him ourselves, gentlemen. And he waves the three thugs upstairs. And amongst the remaining staff and the people trying to stop them, a small brawl breaks out, aided by several of the other patrons. And you guys are kind of caught in the outskirts of it as these three thugs and this guy are trying to push themselves upstairs. The innkeeper is trying to hold them off. The cook comes out with an iron skillet. And a variety of bar patrons are kind of getting involved here. What do you guys do?
See what happens?
Yeah, I stand out of the way.
Yeah.
Can I see your guys' character sheets for a second here? Let me check one thing, please. That's okay. This you can go back.
Okay.
Einar and Barney. Okay. You are kind of folded up into it, nonetheless, as you're kind of jostled around, but you're not throwing any punches. You're kind of letting it work its way out.
Yeah.
All right.
I immediately work to dodge mode.
All right. Yeah. You guys jump around. Now, Thomas Pramhandler, he ultimately does force his way upstairs. You know, there's a couple cracks in the wood as people are pushed and banged. The innkeeper looks upset. But he makes it upstairs, and he begins breaking down the doors until he finds Mr. Von Pfeffrauscher. Now, that is going to be...
Room 11?
The Schmidt's room.
The 10, sorry.
Now... Oh, I just said that. He makes it upstairs. Two of the thugs burst into the room and hold the noble down, and Pramhandler begins horsewhipping him.
What?
While the third thug forces the weeping young woman to watch.
Okay, well, like...
And he begins screaming at him. Pramhandler screaming, "This is what you're doing with my fiance?"
Oops.
And and the noble's like, "I didn't know, I didn't mean to, I mean, ow!" And he's getting slapped and whipped, and the woman's crying, and they're drunk and beating each other up. Meanwhile,
they deserve each other.
Back inside, these guys are upstairs now.
What's his actual name? Pfeffen?
Pfeffrauscher.
Okay.
So he's not the boy?
And meanwhile, you see Ursula come back in through the front door.
Speaking of cooks... I think I'm going to go look in the kitchen. I'm hungry.
T- Take that, Game Master.
All right, you go in and you find yourself some midnight pie. It is 11:50 at night right now.
Okay.
I raise an eyebrow as she's coming back in through the front.
Mouth
I kind
of
look
pie.
Over at her like...
I offer you some.
Ursula?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she says, I was tending to my horse. Let's see. This thing happens. Then, after over the next kind of like the between 11:30 and 11:50, the beatdown of the Schmidt intimate couple occurs. At which point, things calm down a little bit as they've been. Johan's been beaten senseless in his room, and Thomas Pramhandler has his fiance by the arm, and the three thugs are going to drag themselves back out into the common area and leave.
Okay.
Does it look like he's going to hurt her?
He's angry and upset. He's. It's hard to say what he's going to do to her, but you already saw what he did to the other illicit lover.
Mm. My sympathies go out to her.
Drive safe.
Back to the table. There's only 10 minutes left.
you go back to the table, realizing that in all of the commotion, can I have them?
Yep.
They are no longer at their table.
Unacceptable. I asked somebody.
Did they at least leave the completed puzzle on the table for him?
You're not going to be able to solve it.
The puzzle is there, and you can see actually in some rather raw writing, someone tried to do a couple numbers and things.
That's what I was looking for.
Definitely wrong.
Yeah.
And they're only like 25% complete.
Okay. I turned to the nearest
like
people.
Like a kid was writing it.
I turned to the nearest people. Where did these two scholars get off to?
She says that when the patron says they, I think I saw them go out the side door there through the kitchen.
Hmm. Thank you. And I will
through the kitchen, but I've been in the kitchen.
So this all happened during the scuffle. Oh. So you go into the kitchen, the door to the to the courtyard is ajar again, and you haven't seen this before. But the
while I'm in the kitchen, is there anything interesting of note?
Food. There's the leftovers of the food for the day.
And the door ajar.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll go check that out.
Is the kitchen 21? Which one's the kitchen? This is the bar, but...
Let's go 21, yeah.
That is the kitchen?
Yeah,
and then that's the door ajar out to the outside?
Yeah, and then there's some staff rooms in the back.
Piece of paper has all of the rooms on them.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Yeah, 21 will be the kitchen, and then... or maybe it's
25. That's just 25, I would guess. It's got a fireplace.
21 says hall.
Cook pot. There's a... 25 table.
25 is the kitchen.
Yeah.
So it's a big room. Okay, so that way.
And so this is the door that is ajar.
Yeah.
Because it's on the going to the outside part. Okay. Fan-diddly-tastic.
So where are we here? I need to reconcile one thing here for a second. La, la, la.
So I'll go check out the door, the ajar door.
Okay. You look outside and it is a dark courtyard of the inner walls of the coaching inn. No sign of anybody who would have passed.
When you said that to me, did you mean this side door?
No, I meant out the kitchen.
So I go...
Yeah, in essence, they escaped into the courtyard.
Yeah,
in the
so I will join...
Bernie,
as she's, just stepped outside. I'll be, coming right out behind her, looking about right there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But not seeing them, I'll say, come, let's take a look around.
Yeah.
And start heading over here because I know the river's over here, and we'll start looking for the boat or whatever and
all
see
right.
if we can find them.
All right. You head outside and you explore a little bit of the exterior, which I have a couple of descriptions I can give you here. The landing, which is the boat area, you see one rather elaborate barge, and that is probably the Graven's barge. You also see the barge that the Schmidts arrived on.
Mm-hmm.
And the inn's landing stage is wide enough for two small cargo boats to dock alongside or some other larger vessels. The river is wide enough at this point to permit nose-in docking, although the current would pull boats kind of further down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a they can account for a fair amount of river traffic here. But nothing, with your keen night vision for the dwarves, you don't see anything down by the docks. But as you turn your way back to look at the inn again from this angle, you do notice that one set of windows on the second story have been flung open.
Okay.
Now you
can I tell what room it is?
You can tell that it is room 3.
Okay.
Which you know to be the barrister's room.
Oh no, there's no like body on the ground, is there?
Outside the... Oh, no. No. You do hear at that point you hear some commotion coming from the room. You can hear it through the open window.
I yell out, "Barrister!"
There is no response. You then see two dark hands, like shadowed hands, reach out, close the two glass panes of the window, and then whatever light was in the room gets blown out.
I begin running back for the interior.
Yeah, I'll go up to the room and try to barge in too.
All right, and meanwhile,
I'll just follow. All right. They're moving along. It's like, where are they going?
So these guys have left now. So let's leave them. Meanwhile,
where did all the other halflings go? What are they doing?
They're still playing cards.
They're still sitting at table B.
The
stupid humans.
I know.
So you run upstairs, and you the two guards are there. One of them's kind of asleep against the wall. The other one's awake, but not really. And they see you. They see the three of you approaching, and say, is everything all right?
No, we think suspect foul play at the barrister's room.
Yeah. You should check it out.
Stand aside and scoot on.
So he says, his room's that one there.
Thank you.
You guys run over to room 3, and you swing open the door. It's unlocked. And you see Gustav in the room, dead.
Dum, dum, dum.
Oh,
Gustav
no.
has
well,
been...
We solved the blackmail problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not gonna get anything out of him now.
There appears to be nobody else in the room. And the window is closed.
Wait, is there a puddle of water? And is he hung in the middle of the room?
Yeah, like, how dead?
Yeah,
what,
I mean...
He was the circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He appears to have been stabbed multiple times.
Wait.
And, you know, in the light of the fireplace... That's the only thing. That's the only small amount of light that is still here.
Is the stabby weapon still stuck in him?
It is not.
Was he? He's part of the Graven's traveling party.
She's his lawyer, personal
yes.
lawyer.
You mean he's her lawyer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Somebody should tell her. She might be in danger.
So the two guards had to have seen somebody come out of that room,
nah.
Or they jumped out the
well,
window.
People have been coming and going for the last 30 minutes.
But you said that the hands that closed the window were black, you said? Like black gloves?
Just silhouette-y.
Yeah, that.
Oh.
Silhouetted.
So they were in the room. That means they had to leave the room where they're hiding.
So I'll look under the bed.
You look under the bed. No.
In the closet.
The only closets are empty. The only way you could suspect is if they either left out the front door and got past the guards, or perhaps climbed up the... one of the chimneys in the room that would lead them up to the roof.
But there's a fire still burning in it, yeah?
Yeah.
In the fireplace? All right. I'll check that off the list as unlikely. I will step out into the light of the hall and just look on the ground and see if there's any blood.
There is not.
I think... Is there anywhere else in the room to look?
It doesn't. Not that you can see.
Pretty tiny box.
Think of. Yeah.
I mean, okay.
I'll approach the conscious guard and get really close and say, "The barrister is dead in his room."
The guy kind of like, and he like smashes the other guy on the shoulder to like wake him up, and they said, "Who? How?"
We don't know. We saw the window open from outside and someone shut it. We came running in to see how he was.
I dozed off a few minutes ago.
Go tell the Graven.
Yeah. Okay. And they like, so they go and they say, wait, or I don't know, do whatever you guys need to do. I'm gonna go talk to them. And they kind of like bumble for a minute while they get their bearings, and then prepare to knock on the Graven's door.
Do we want to knock on the Traveler's door?
I don't know.
You do. Ursula, mm-hmm. You see, she comes upstairs calmly. Can you hand me Ursula there, please? And she goes to her room.
I will.
And closes the door.
Well, I'll gesture for her if she...
Oh, she says, yes. Yes.
There's been a murder.
Really?
Successful this time.
May I ask who?
The barrister is dead. Stabbed.
She seems somewhat disappointed by that answer.
Okay.
She says, okay. This is a strange night. Do we know who?
We saw the window open from outside as we were looking for the scholars that were downstairs earlier. We suspect them of being other than who they say they are. But we came outside looking for them, saw the window open, and when we called out to the barrister, someone shut the window. We rushed upstairs and found him stabbed to death in his room.
She says, well, that is concerning, but this is... I have other pressing matters to deal with tonight. I trust the Graven has her own security in hand.
Perhaps. Did you see the scholars downstairs when you came back up?
No, they haven't come back down. Have you checked their room? Perhaps they're there.
Not yet. I have no,
she says, I think
I have no true staying. Authority here, but I
she
do
says, suspect I think they're
them.
Staying here and points to the room.
Okay.
But she bids you guys good night and walks down the hall to, or walks down here to 18 and goes to bed. Or closes the door, presumably to go to bed.
I'm going to go knock on door 11.
All right. You knock on door 11.
I think it's a good idea.
There's no response.
I'll try the handle.
The door's open.
I will cautiously peer in.
And you... I'm sorry. I mixed something up there. You knock on the door. They say... Come in. You don't need to knock.
All right, I'll come in.
And you see the two scholars sitting there, seemingly waiting for somebody to come in. And they are sitting at their chairs.
Is it
chairs.
The two women?
It is the two...
Helga and Elia. That right there.
Elfwiz?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, there we go. They're there. Okay, so this is you, Layla. So Alrella and Helga
mm-hmm.
are up there,
okay.
And they are waiting for, presumably waiting for Elfwise. They seem surprised that you've come in, and are taking the next several moments to compose themselves. So what do you do?
I'm going to...
They're sitting down, like, you know, going over...
I tell them they're under arrest.
They kick back their chairs and stand up and say, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, you know.
But you catch a little twinkle in their eye that they're not going to come quietly.
What are you guys doing?
Well, I'm right here, so nothing yet. I'm a little amused that you just proclaimed that they're under arrest.
What? It's a citizen's arrest.
Uh-huh. I'm like, huh, I should get back that up. I'm waiting.
They both stand up. They are startled for the moment, but they appear to be reaching into their cloaks to pull something out.
I'll reach into my cloak and pull something out. I don't have a gun.
I know. She just points her finger.
Is this? Are you starting a combat here?
I'm going to take out my sword.
So mechanically speaking, if you want to initiate combat, you would have a round of surprise on them.
Yeah.
If you continue to talk with them, the surprise will be...
Well, I tell them they're under arrest, and if they make any move that's hostile, then I'll whip my sword out.
All right, so they start to pull out, and quickly you see the sheen of a dagger.
Okay, so yeah, I take my sword out, and...
All right, you're going in.
I've got my shield.
question?
I will say to Madison, well, that escalated.
Yeah, you guys see Bernie charge into the room after Hell saying on. Somebody's arrested. You're under arrest.
Bang! Stop!
Oh, it's been a while. Bang, stop.
Well, come on, we know they're part of it.
Uh-huh.
All right, you go in there, swinging. What's your initiative?
My initiative is 40.
We okay on time?
Yeah, I didn't want to cut this into two, but like we might need to.
We need 30. Right, we're getting there.
Yeah, Dougie, I don't want you to have to go too long here. We are, you know what, we will end at midnight, which this is the last event preceding midnight.
Okay.
So oh, full combat?
Well, no, this is not as long a combat as it sounds like, okay. But yeah, it'll be a combat. Are you guys going to join it?
I'm going to, but not this first round. Okay. She got the surprise on me, too. I'm like, holy shit.
Okay. Bernie, though, you get to go first twice because of your surprise, because uh-huh. They're both stunned for the first turn.
Sweet.
And stunned gives them quite a penalty going into their... I'm sorry, not stunned, they're surprised. Surprised is they can take no actions on their turn, and you gain plus 20 to hit each of them.
So I don't want to kill them. I want to just, like, stop them from being mobile.
All right. That's going to require... That still requires to get them to zero wounds.
You kill them, but it can't move anymore. That's true.
All right.
You're ever so right about that.
Are you attacking Elanella or Helga?
I'll go for...
The older woman or the younger woman?
The younger one.
All right. So that'll be Elrella.
Ew. And this is my melee?
Nice. Yeah, melee basic.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And what,
Minus 4.
I'm at... And I said... You said I get plus 20?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm, like, plus 5? Yeah.
Okay, so you're at plus 9 then, taking into account.
Oh, no, without that. Without whatever you just added, yeah. I'm at plus 3.
Oh, that's it?
She threw a 13.
Yeah. My melee is 46.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you get plus 20 to your roll.
So
that 66. Brings you up to 5.
So plus 5.
So plus 5.
And then plus another 4 for their minus
plus
4
9.
That they got.
Oh, that's what you were saying.
So you have a total of 10. Quickly. Yeah. So you hit them. You hit them for 10. What's your weapon damage?
Weapon damage is 7.
Plus your strength. Oh, you're
yeah, it's total.
So 17 minus their toughness of 5.
I think you just cut their head
off.
Can I just knock him out?
So Elrella takes a crippling blow. She is tougher than she looks. Maybe a little... she looks like a wafy young woman, but she just took a solid hit. She's not fully down, but you clobbered her like nobody's business. all right, and then that's they both now have recovered from their stun.
I thought you said I get to go twice.
Yeah, and now we're at the top of the second round where they do not have the surprise condition. And Bernie, you get to go again.
And now I get...
Because you're the top of the
and
initiative.
And I get a...
an advantage.
Yeah.
Yes, let me grab
so
it.
So what does that give me? Plus
10. Plus 10.
10. Yep. Okay.
I'm on 30 now, so wherever that puts me in.
That was less exciting.
You're going to go second.
Okay. So, and this time, do I have any advantage or no?
Just the plus 10 you have there.
Okay, so plus 10... I think I'm at minus 1.
Minus 1. They got minus 5.
Okay.
So you have a positive 4 success.
So
in addition to your... Or is that including your...
That's including.
All right, positive 4. You clobber her, or you stab her with your sword, and she is unconscious.
Okay.
So Elrella falls to the ground, unconscious. Einar, you're up.
So I will rush down here, drawing my weapon as I move. And is the other person...
You come just in time to see Bernie stab Alarella through the chest.
Does the other person have second thoughts about...
They... Not yet. Not yet.
Still looks like she's going for a weapon?
So far.
Okay.
We're going to see how this goes for her. She hasn't yet... Not quite ready to give up.
I'll move in and strike then, and same thing that she's doing. I'm going to, you know, strike to subdue, not to murder.
Okay.
You know, whacking her with the flat of the blade or whatever.
Yeah, so holding your blow.
Yep.
40.
So I have no...
Minus 1.
Boop, boop, boop. And I'm at minus 2.
All right, so that's a miss. Yep. All right. That, Helga then... turns to Bernie and screaming that you've killed her friend and compatriot in the Ordo Ultima, lunges out at you with her dagger. Serious miss.
I'm at minus two.
She's at minus six.
Cool.
She swipes into the air and loses a little bit of her gusto following that attack. That was kind of her all or nothing. And she starts looking around, realizing she's clearly outnumbered now, and is trying to decide what she should do.
When she's thinking, I run in and take my dagger, and I want to cut open the shirt of the injured girl. I need to see her chest. I need to know what's on her chest.
There's a pair.
Okay. Well, I have a pair too. That's
there's
no big deal.
There's this pair of round, like they're good size, but not super big or small.
Okay.
Letters.
Letters. Okay.
That form a U and an O.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like inside.
Is it like
a
branding thing?
It's your brand. It's on the left breast of kind of near the collarbone.
Okay.
So and
branding.
You suspect that is the sigil of the Ordo Ultima.
Okay. I didn't know.
That was a smart idea. A little pervy, but you
know. Well, I'm a girl. It doesn't matter.
So, lastly, the Helga then stops and
looks submits like to her arrest.
Submits to her arrest, though you can see that she's contemplating an alternative.
Can I knock her out? I'll try to knock her out just so that, like, she's not difficult anymore.
All right, she attempts to, as you approach her, she puts her knife up to her own throat.
I'm okay with it.
She can't add. I doubt she can kill herself.
She says something incomprehensible.
Where's your friend?
She doesn't even look like she's listening anymore. Okay. She's gone, like,
chant
like
mode.
Speech mode prior to slitting her
Boy.
Own throat.
Uh-huh.
And she babbles out something in a language that's incomprehensible to you. But a couple of the words, one of the words you pull out of it that you've heard before and sinks into your soul just hearing it, is the word Slaanesh.
Oh, God.
And the just hearing it, these like tingles go down your spine. This word just carries power just by even being spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, gives her life in pleasure and in pain, and slits her own throat, and then smiles, just like letting her blood flow across the floor as she just enjoys this pain of death. And you can see by the time she collapses onto the ground, she's got this just a grin of ecstasy on her face.
Okay.
So, as that scene comes to a close there, there is a tremendous amount of shouting and scuffling occurs coming from the inn that the Morians have
their room,
which is room 9. It's just across the hall. You start hearing scuffling, bangs, booms, and shouting.
We've got two more.
as the clock strikes midnight, dong, dong, dong. That room has come alive.